There was a businessman that was looking for a new accountant for his business. And he was wanting an accountant, shall we say, that was kind of creative. And so he had three applicants for the job, and he proceeded to interview them the next day. The first applicant came in and sat at the desk, and the manager talked about what he was looking for. And he finally asked the applicant, he said, "What's 2 plus 2? Well, the applicant's kind of like, "Well, 4. "Okay, thank you. We'll be in touch." And the next applicant came in, of course, they had some small talk, and he asked him, "What's 2 plus 2 mean, add up to?" And the guy said, "Well, I suppose we're doing just basic addition. It could be 4. It could be 1 plus 3, or it could be, 0 plus 4. But it's going to be 4, I think." "Okay, thank you. We'll be in touch." Third guy come in, and same thing, visited and asked him, "What's 2 plus 2? And the guy looked around, the applicant looked around, and shut the door and says, "What do you want it to be?" He got the job, of course. So the question this morning is, Christianity reasonable? The answer to the question is, well, it all depends. What answer are you looking for? What would you like the answer to be? If Christianity offers the answer you're looking for, then it is reasonable to you. Paul tells us in our passage this morning that I've already read from 1 Corinthians, that there are people out there who don't like Christianity because it doesn't offer the kind of answer they are looking for, or the answer they want to hear. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 1:23, "We preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles." The cross is a stumbling block to many. It's foolishness to a lot of folks. In fact, there's even something about the message of the cross that makes a lot of people uneasy. It annoys some people. It makes some people upset. And sometimes they even become confrontational or nasty with their attitude concerning the cross. From history, we know that the Roman historian Tacitus called Christianity a pernicious superstition. Sigmund Freud, the great father of modern psychology, he believed that religion, and specifically Christianity, was a mental illness, or people just relied on it as a crutch. Our modern day, he's not a comedian, he thinks he is, but he calls himself a comedian, Bill Maher, he calls God a psychotic mass murderer. So Tacitus, Freud, and Bill Maher are just a few of those who are offended by the message of the cross. It makes them angry to think that anyone would embrace what we believe. And yet, for those of us who understand what the cross means, we know that the cross of Christ is the answer, and it is the power of God. As Paul wrote, "The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God." That's 1 Corinthians 1:18. The cross is the right answer, if it is the answer you're wanting, if it's the answer you're looking for, if it's the answer you're seeking out. But for most of the world, it is not the answer they're looking for. Many people only want an answer that will give them control of their lives. They want to be in charge. The Bible offends them because it declares that our lives are to be controlled by God. The cross declares that God bought you with a price, and that we are not our own. If we accept the answer of the cross, then we must cede our authority in our life over to Christ. We can't have it both ways. That answer doesn't sit well with a lot of folks, because they don't want to be controlled by anything. They don't want other people in control. Or if they do believe in God or a God, they don't want a God who demands change in their lives. They want to keep living the way they're living. They want a God who will change for them. They want to say how their lives should be run. That was a problem for the Jews of Jesus' day. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 1:22 that the Jews demanded miraculous signs. What does it mean they demanded signs? Didn't Jesus do miraculous things during His ministry? Of course He did. And He had many followers, didn't He? He healed the sick, He raised the dead, and He fed thousands of people with just a small amount of food to start with. And because He did all these signs, the multitudes followed Him. Wherever He went, people would crowd the hills, the hillsides, and the seashores, you know, even so much that He had to take a boat and go out into the water because He was being so crowded. And sometimes He would speak for hours on end, and the multitudes followed Him. That is, until He was crucified. Were any of the multitudes there at the trial? Were any of the multitudes there when He was beaten by the Roman soldiers? Nobody was there except a couple of His closest friends. And they were kind of out on the fringe, weren't they? These multitudes, as long as Jesus was doing what they wanted Him to do, they'd follow Him. As long as He was filling their bellies, as long as He was healing their diseases. And they were expecting the Messiah to free them from Roman authority. That's what they were expecting. That's what they wanted from Him. But once He was arrested and He was condemned and crucified, they all left Him. The cross was not the answer they were looking for. A lot of people who rejected Christ in their lives have done that for the same reason. God didn't answer a prayer that they were wanting to answer their way. He didn't answer it in the time frame they wanted. Or something happened in their lives that hurt them terribly. And they felt betrayed because God didn't protect them from that pain. And they walked away. As long as God did what they wanted done, they were willing to follow Him. But when He didn't protect them from suffering and hardship, they left Him behind. That wasn't the God they wanted. They didn't want a God that expected them to live like the holy and sanctified souls that they were. The cross defies that notion. The cross speaks of death and suffering, pain and loss. It speaks of a world that is unfair and unjust. It speaks of a world where even God's own people are often required to suffer tragedy and hardship in their lives. The cross declares that life won't always turn out the way you want it to, but that your life will ultimately turn out the way God wants it to when you cede authority to Him. Matthew 10:33-34. But whoever denies Me before men, I will also deny him before My Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. And then Jesus goes on to describe how He was going to probably end up separating families because of His the things He demands in our life. Also in John 16:33, says, in this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. The cross declares that this world will be hard. We will have trouble. But there is something better on the other side. He says, I have overcome the world. If we are united with Him in His death, we are united in Him in His resurrection. There's something waiting on the other side. If you're looking for God's answer, then that's perfectly reasonable to be a Christian. The cross of Christ tells us about the truth of life, the suffering, the pain, and if we are willing to wait on Him, Jesus will carry us through. What does the Psalm say in Psalm 23? Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because You are with me. Even the psalmist, the man after God's own heart, David, realized that he was going to walk through the shadow of death and face trials in his life. That's the answer the world needs to understand. So first, the world looks for an answer that will allow them to be in control. That's the first mistake they make. Secondly, the world looks for an answer that allows them to be wise. Paul wrote that the Greeks, or the Gentiles, depending on what translation you use, the Greeks look for wisdom. 1 Corinthians 1:22. They wanted to be able to understand their world on their terms according to their wisdom. You know, the Greeks were really into this, seeking out wisdom, seeking out understanding, their own understanding. You know, that culture gave us their philosophers, that people still enjoy studying about. They gave us Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, you know, all these great philosophers. But their philosophers were looking for wisdom based on their perceptions and views of life. When it came to God, they couldn't explain Him or understand Him on their terms, and they weren't going to be happy, were they? God had to fit in the little box they had built for Him. A college student once told a professor, a Christian professor, "For me to believe in God, I have to have a God that I can understand." And the professor smiled and replied, "God refuses to be that small. God refuses to be small enough for us to understand on our own terms." Isaiah 55:8-9, God declared, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts your thoughts." God doesn't fit in a neat little box. He's not easily understood, and He's different than we are. When he can see all eternity from beginning to end at any moment, that should humble us significantly. He thinks differently than we do. He acts differently than we do. And that's why it is so important to read and study the Bible. This is our window into His personality. It's our textbook on how to understand God. It tells us all that we need to know about who God is and what He is like. It tells us of a God we wouldn't have ever created on our own. One of the major characteristics of God that we find is in the cross. Isaiah 59:15-17 is a prophecy concerning this. "Yes, truth is lacking, and he who turns aside from evil makes himself a prey. Now the Lord saw, and it was displeasing in his sight that there was no justice. And he saw that there was no man, and was astonished that there was no one to intercede. Then his own arm brought salvation to him, and his righteousness upheld him. He put on righteousness like a breastplate and a helmet of salvation on his head. And he put on garments of vengeance for clothing and wrapped himself with zeal as a mantle." Speaking about Jesus Christ here, isn't he? He saw there was nobody on earth that was just and righteous enough to die for our sins. So he sent his own son, and he was zealous for righteousness. God clothed himself with righteousness and came down to intervene on our behalf. The Greeks couldn't understand that. They couldn't understand a God who sacrificed himself for them. You know, we've probably all studied the mythology of the pantheon of the gods in the Greek culture way back thousands of years ago. And they're, you know, intriguing stories and interesting. And the multitude, if we learn about the multitude of these gods that they worshipped, it's interesting because none of the gods were like the God of Scripture, the Jehovah God. We know there was Zeus and Poseidon, Aphrodite, and numerous other gods and female gods. But there were stories, if you read the stories, they were described as always being egotistical, selfish, bickering, fighting, vindictive, adulterous, heartless, and seeking revenge, weren't they? Why would people think these were good attitudes for a God to have? Because you know they made it up. What's baffling is that these people actually worshipped these gods and made sacrifices to these petty and mean-spirited gods. Why would they portray their God as being so these ways, these evil ways? Because those were the kinds of lifestyles they were related to, wasn't it? These were the kind of behaviors they could understand. Because this was how the average person at that time, without any influence of God, would view life itself. It's how they lived their lives. The Greeks could not understand a God who would sacrifice himself for them because they wouldn't be willing to do that for others. The cross declared a God that they could not understand in their own wisdom. You know, true optimism is hard to find, isn't it? It's hard to find. You know, we really notice somebody that's optimistic all the time. Christians should be the most optimistic people out there. some that are dour and negative all the time, they may say, well, I'm just being realistic. That's just an excuse. We can be realistic and be optimistic at the same time. It just depends on what you're going to focus on. It just takes effort. How can we be both optimistic and realistic at the same time? When we face these difficult things in our life, it's because we have a God who is real. It's not a God that we've cooked up in our imagination. It's not a God that is a result of my own personal wisdom. God is real. We can be optimistic and realistic because we know, in reality, God stepped down out of heaven and took our place on the cross, didn't He? God loved me so much that He gave His only begotten Son, that since I believe in Him, I will not perish but have everlasting life. And if I have a God who is willing to do that, what else would He do for me? Many, many things, wouldn't He? My God isn't based on my wisdom and my perception of life. My God is based on reality, and so is my attitude. So we need to be optimistic. Since we have a God that is real and really cares about me, cares about us, that makes us realists that are optimistic. So if the world looks for an answer that will give them control of their lives, the world looks for an answer that allows them to be wise on their own terms, and the world is looking for an answer that will give them strength on their terms. 1 Corinthians 1:25 says, the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength. Many in this world want to be strong, don't they? Or they want people around them that are strong. Sometimes when they tell you a story about themselves, they may come across as heroes in that story. They may kind of add to the story a little bit. We don't want anybody like that, do we? It's kind of like a John Wayne movie. He's always the biggest, toughest, roughest, toughest, strongest, meanest, whatever. He's always the alpha male, as we say. Folks don't like to come across as being weak. They don't like being shown as having failed, do we? We don't like our failures pointed out. Nobody does. We don't like hearing that we have messed up. So we tend to reject messages that point out these things in our life, because it describes, the message of the cross is that when we fail, we have sinned. You know, the singer Billy Joel spoke about how he was offended by the message of the cross. He says, quote, "I viewed the whole business as a lot of very enthralling hocus pocus. There's a guy nailed to a cross and dripping blood, and everyone's blaming themselves for that man's torment. But I said to myself, forget it. I had no hand in that evil. I have no original sin. There's no blood on any sacred martyr on my hands. I'll pass on all this." Billy Joel doesn't like the idea that his personal sin put Jesus on the cross. That would mean he was guilty of sin, that he was weak, that he had failed. And people don't want to hear that. But the message of the cross isn't so much that Billy Joel killed Jesus by his sins. Now listen carefully. We didn't kill Jesus on the cross because of our sins. It's that we deserve to be on the cross, and Jesus volunteered to take our place. There's kind of a fine distinction there. Jesus volunteered to take our place. We would face the judgment of eternal death and destruction without Jesus voluntarily taking our place. Jesus came to die for those of us who have failed, for the weak and broken and the losers of life, as we think of them, which is all of us. And that's why the message of the cross is so powerful for people that are seeking help from this. Jesus said He didn't come for the healthy, He came for the sick. Anybody could come up with a religion where anyone who deserves to go to heaven can get into heaven. The problem is, for heaven to be any reward, it has to be perfect. And nobody could deserve it, perfection, because nobody can be perfect. But the cross, at the cross, Jesus promised that those who did not deserve heaven could receive the grace of heaven. All the other religions in the world are designed to assure the righteous and the deserving that by their own strength and their own goodness can buy their way into heaven by doing works or whatever. But the cross declares that not only does no one deserve salvation or nobody can earn heaven, the only way we can get into paradise is by accepting the sacrifice of Christ. We have to admit that we are weak and undeserving of His grace, and yet He is going to give it to us if we accept it. The world views this as an insult to their reliance on strength. They want power, not weakness. The cross is all about power. Not our power, not our neighbor's power, but God's power and salvation. 1 Corinthians 1:18. The message of the cross to us who are being saved is the power of God. The cross supplies power the world does not want to accept. It supplies an answer the world can't provide. And we have to understand that if we're going to accept it. The cross is our answer to this world because it is only through the cross that lives can be changed. That's the power of God into salvation. And that is the answer the world needs to hear. A long time ago, there was a minister who was working in the slums, the rundown parts of London. He was a man, had strong faith, and he was doing a lot of good helping these people in the slums of London. There was also a man that he knew that was an outstanding atheist in England. He was well known for his opinions. And they challenged each other to a debate. Or the atheist challenged this minister to a debate. And he said he'd be glad to engage in a debate about the existence of God and Christ and salvation and heaven and all these things. But he said, we need to lay some ground rules. There's one condition. I'll have this debate. I want you to bring 100 people that have been influenced positively by your teaching and your speaking in their life. They have been influenced positively, have turned their life around because of the things you teach. He says, no, wait. Let's cut it down to 50. 50 people that have been positively influenced and turned their life around because of your atheist teachings. No, it's kind of like Abraham and Lot, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah. Finally, he brought down to 20, brought down to 10. If you can bring 10 people that have been positively influenced by your teaching about atheism in their life, then I will engage in the debate. But of course, the atheist gave up. He couldn't find anybody that had been positively influenced and turned their life around because of his teaching. He withdrew his challenge. He was basically saying this: the reasonableness of Christianity is in the changed lives it produces. It's the answer of the cross and the power of the cross that we're looking for. Man's attempt to seek control in our own lives, and man's attempt to live by our own wisdom, and man's attempt to live on our own strength, they all fail. Because they are not really life-changing answers. I'm assuming that all here today want to be disciples of the Lord. I'm assuming that if you're here, you're seeking out the wisdom of God. You're seeking out the power of God. You're not convinced that this is all foolishness. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. We are all looking to the answer of the cross in our own lives. But perhaps we know someone who is not willing to accept that. Someone who has not yet accepted it. Someone who is seeking their own answers, and they end up rejecting the cross in the process. It's time we learned to ask these people that we know in our lives, how's that working out for you? Do you sleep well at night? Do you struggle with sleeplessness because of things you've done or said in the past? Are you discouraged because you always fail? Or do you feel good about yourself? Do you believe that if you died tonight, you'd be able to stand confidently before God? That's the questions we need to be asking. The cross is the answer the world needs. We need to say, right along with Paul, 1 Corinthians 2, verse 2, "For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." The cross gives the answers to all those struggles in life. But first, we have to lay down our life at the foot of the cross. If you would, resolve to know nothing this morning except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. If you would, let's stand and sing. Thank you.